Welcome to the Automate and Grow podcast.
Okay, welcome to another episode of Automate and Grow. We are on episode 17, and I'm here with Dennis Mortensen from X.AI, which is a Silicon Alley out of New York startup. And they're doing some really interesting stuff. Obviously, it's in the name, which is AI, artificial intelligence. So Dennis, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate you jumping on.
Thanks much for having me.
So we talked a little bit before we got going, and I learned a little bit about your past, but maybe give me a little bit of an idea for the audience, how you got to this point, some of the other ventures you've been involved with, and then we can talk a little bit more specifically about what X.AI does.
Sure. So sadly, I'm getting a little bit older. So this is my fifth venture over the last 23 years. And we spend about short of half a decade on each one of them. And we've been so fortunate to have three good exits and one that didn't pan out as we had hoped for on the four that kind of came before this one. Just before we started X.AI, me and the team did a predictive analytics venture for media. So this idea of trying to predict what stories to carry on the homepage of, say, CNN, exactly where, for how long, once you pull it, what other story do we put it in its place? Kind of like a machine-driven editor of sorts. And that ended up being acquired by Outbrain in 2013. And before that, we ran a traditional enterprise web analytics company, think Google Analytics or Omniture, and did that actually out of Budapest in Eastern Europe. Wow. Somehow sold my wife on moving there for 4 years. And ended up selling that company to Yahoo, which is actually how I ended up in the US to begin with. We sold that in 2008. And then in December of 2013, kind of moving forward again, I brought the team back together to see if it was not time to go build this intelligent agent that could go schedule meetings on my behalf. And that was the kind of particular pain that we latched on to. And I think the catalyst was easy for me, at least, because I just looked at my own calendar and all of the shit I had to do to kind of put that in place. And it's not that it's hard.
Yeah.
It's just that it's yet another chore in my inbox. As in, there's nothing more fun than talking to you, but setting this up, I said, I don't really care whether this is Thursday at 3, Wednesday at 2, or next week Monday at 11. What I care about is this, you and I talking. So that was kind of the catalyst to see if we could not remove that pain. We latched on to that and then ended up spending the last 4 years really doing core R&D. And then we spent the last year in trying to kind of commercialize it and put it into market. And here we are.
And so now you have a product that you're outselling and people are adopting. And so just to clarify, the problem is basically rather than going back and forth, and we've seen various solutions to calendaring issues, but you have an actual artificial intelligence that is emailing the person to try and communicate back and forth a good time to meet. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I certainly don't suggest that we woke up and had some sort of unique epiphany for where we were the only ones who knew that there's pain attached to that of setting up a meeting. I think anybody knew that.
Oh, probably,
and
yeah.
Given the fact that anybody knows that that's really a process that comes with some sort of attached pain, you've seen a ton of solutions. And in my little kind of competitive spreadsheets, I've seen about 80 plus companies trying to solve this. Companies kind of walk down what I believe, and this is only where I'm slightly biased, the same avenue. Some sort of plugin, some extension, some app, some web service, some Doodle Me, some Tungle Me. You and me, we've tried probably all of them. And it's not that it's not a good try, but the market decided that, you know what, it's nifty, but it's not really what I need. So I'm still just going to reply back to this email where you sent Dennis something saying, hey, Dennis, I'm actually going to be in downtown Manhattan. Do you got time to meet up for a Diet Coke? Then we do a little bit of email ping pong and figure out that we're supposed to meet up next Thursday at 11 at 200 Broadway. And again, it's not that that's hard. It's just that I'd rather be without it. So the agent that we've crafted or engineered over the last 4 years is one for where I can just reply back and say, yeah, Michael, I'm up for that. I have CC'd in Amy at X.AI, and she can help put something on my calendar for half an hour. Watch your downtown next week. As I click send, I immediately click archive. Why? Because this is not my job anymore. It's now Amy's job. And then I can leave her to, one, understand what I just asked her to do, reach out to you in natural language, and have not just a conversation with you, but really a negotiation on exactly when we're supposed to meet, with all of the little details that comes along with that, which is you saying, it's probably going to be some afternoon. It would be lovely if Dennis had 45 minutes, because that's something I want to demo to him. Where's your office at? And so on and so forth. And with that, which sounds kind of easy, right? Because it feels human, comes all the complexity.
But it's
right?
Very time consuming, right? And I think you hit it on the head where I think most of the solutions to this point have been, well, here's my calendar, pick something that works for you, which is useful. But it sounds like what you've taken is you've taken a more elegant approach to it that probably has a future of doing more, is my assumption. But
so I'm certainly very eager. And if you ask people to not change context, right, which is that I'm on the go, I'm the 2-3 train, I'm looking at my email on my mobile phone, and I get an email from you, and it takes me very little time to kind of determine that, yeah, I want to talk to you, as in, I can very easily decide that. What I don't want to do as I'm sitting there with my mobile here is kind of say, oh yeah, let me double click, go into my calendar, right, look at a set of times, memorize those, jump back, craft some emails for you, open up an app or click some times. That, no, that's not what I want to do. I just want to look at that email and say, yeah, let's do that. You know what? Amy can find some time in my calendar. Send. I don't want to change away from that. And that, I think, has been certainly the beginning point to our success, which is that you can just reply back in the exact same chain, ask some other entity who happens to be a machine. But remember, that could have been a human. And in many cases, certainly, if you won the corporate lottery, that would have been a human, right? You got some person.
You're saying an assistant. Like a
yeah.
person. Yeah, right. Which feels very old school to me, like that someone would have an assistant to do that. Whereas now it's like you still have the persona, but you've kind of eliminated the need to have a, what's maybe not, it's hard to say. Would you describe this as a repetitive but important task, but maybe not a high value task? Or
that's a,
I don't want to belittle it. I'm not trying to do that, but I'm just trying to.
It's kind of like you looking at your inbox right now and say you are somewhat in control. There's 42 emails, not 10,000. So 42 emails. Those 42 emails, there'll just be a set of things that align to what you're supposed to do. And there'll be a set of things for where you can't delete it. It's still part of you being able to do your job, but they're just chores. So
right.
You submitting your receipts, it's not core, but hey,
it's got to get done.
All these things, right?
Right.
Well, planning that trip to Austin, it's not core, but if I don't end up in Austin, then I can't do my job. Or you setting up this call with Dennis, I wouldn't say it's core, but I still need to talk to Dennis.
Right.
So I think there's plenty of things where we can certainly debate whether they are core or essential or important. It's just that if you don't do them, then most certainly you won't get to the important.
Right. And that's why, and I should give you context, but one of the things that I wrote about was how the goal of entrepreneurs should be to kind of divide their day up and look, or every 90 days evaluate, you know, what they're doing. And one of the categories is stuff that's repetitive but important, but not high value, right? So they can be free to do the cool stuff. So they can do a podcast, they can write, they can, you know, produce important content, talk to important customers, build something, whatever that is, right? But it's that, to your point, it may not be core, but it's got to get done.
So
and it's repetitive, so it's got a lot of touch points. So I think that's why I kind of highlight it. Like you fall into that sweet spot of an example where it's like, well, if I can get this off my plate, it's still done well, but I don't have to pay someone 50 grand a year to do it.
And what's even sadder here is that it is unavoidable. As in, there is no job in the knowledge economy where you can say, you know what? I've decided to not do meetings. You know what? It's also been decided that you don't work here anymore. As in, there's no escaping the idea of doing meetings. Right. And even the most hardcore back-end infrastructure engineer who might tell you that I don't do meetings, yeah, you do. You still need to attend the all hands, the stand-up, or that thing that didn't even feel like a meeting where you worked on the whiteboard with another engineer. But you know what? That was a meeting. So everybody needs to do this. And anybody listening to this, the first thing they should do, if they're calling bullshit on this, is go into your calendar. Just look at the last 2 weeks. Kind of gonna lean back and say, damn, 24 meetings, which is tiny. As in, if you're in recruiting or sales or account management or customer success, you do way more than that.
Right.
Say it's just 24 meetings. Let me try to imagine, how much time did I spend on setting them up? Did I spend 2 minutes per email? There's about 4 emails, so that's 8 minutes. 8 minutes times 24, that's 200 minutes. That's 3-4 hours. 3-4 full hours. That's a half working day every 2 weeks just trying to meet up with people. That time adds up very rapidly. It's just that it comes in very small increments, so we tend to forget about it. I said, no, yeah, sure, I do a little bit here and there. No, you spend half a workday. You spend a full workday every month. How wonderful would it be that if somehow I could tell you, you know what? Once a month, you win the lottery, you get a Friday off. That would be awesome.
There you go. So how sophisticated is it from a, or how difficult is it from a setup point of view? Like, are you giving criteria? How do you adjust it? Is there communication between you and the AI? I'm kind of curious how that works, because I can perceive where it's like, well, I want to, you know, now I can think of, now I got this under control, I want to, like, how do I call it, shape my time, right? Like, so I'm curious how you've approached that, or if that's part of the problem that you can envision that you're dealing with.
So that's certainly part of how we're solving it. So even if you were one of the lucky ones, and there's almost nobody who wins that corporate lottery anymore, and you ended up hiring a human to do this for you, as in you were willing to write the $50,000 check, the first thing you would do is that you would sit that person down and say, hey, as you allude to, this is how I would like you to kind of manage my calendar. I don't do meetings at 8 a.m. No, I don't want to sit here at 10 p.m. on a Friday night. No, I don't do two-hour meetings. Keep them a little bit more compressed. Hey, don't do back-to-back meetings all day long. I like to kind of think in between. Unless, of course, you're in sales. Stack them up, baby. I'm on commission.
Right. Give me more.
Just, yeah, give me more, right?
Right?
So you have all sorts of unique kind of requirements, which makes your use of Amy different to my use, just because we manage our calendars differently. So the very first thing you do when you hire Amy and Andrew is that you tell them the same. We have kind of a web backdrop for where you tell them, when do you start your day? When do you end your day? When do you do lunch? How long is your lunch? How long do you want meetings? Do you want it to be a default call, default in person? Do you want people to call you? Should I call them? Where do you tend to meet up if you do lunch? Where do you do your drinks at night?
Oh, interesting.
All of those
okay.
Little things, right? So that
because there's location as part of me. I didn't even think of that. Like, where location is this a, you know, a conference call? What's my conference require? It gets more complex when you think about it in those terms, like.
And people tend to spend that first kind of initial kind of sit down and just at least doing a rough framework for, that's how I want you to work for me. Here's the funny thing though. People tend to be a little bit more optimistic about who they are than who they really are. So they'll tell Amy, oh yeah, I love meetings early. But Amy is a machine. She'll just do meetings early then because you told her so. Then they feel, you know what? I'm not really up for meetings at 8:30, so let's tune this a little bit. So we tend to see people create a rough framework, and then they tighten it over time.
That makes sense. And then where do you, like, are you targeting corporate users? Are you targeting individual users? Like, do you have a focus at this point in time? Or?
So we certainly see people at work being the ones getting the most out of our agents. How do they then acquire that? It sometimes starts with them just being in pain. You're just some lovely, competent woman in recruiting at Netflix. But somehow, we don't have a relationship with Netflix, but you're still in pain. So what we see is that That woman from Netflix, she'll just sign up, use a personal credit card, but she's still using it at Netflix.
Oh, that's then, interesting. So, you don't need corporate governance, you don't need permission for this to work.
This, the way this works, remember, if I worked for you, one of the things you would give me is an email. And then you would email me things you wanted me to do for you. That's not really technical infrastructure. That is just me having an email so you can say, hey, Dennis, can you go pick that up or can you set up that meeting? Because in that setting, really the only way you need to communicate with me is in natural language and you tell me what to do. And that means if you hire Amy, she's on an email. You can just email her and tell her to do stuff. The only thing we need, though, is if I work for that splendid woman at Netflix, she needs to grant me access to her calendar. Because any assistant who needs to manage your calendar, if they can't see your calendar, then you just hired a blind assistant.
That makes sense.
That doesn't go well. But most systems today, say you're on Office 365, Google G Suite, they actually allow individuals to grant access to their individual calendar. So they don't need IT to participate. Having said that, that is one segment where I would really like to go as we move forward, and we have just introduced our enterprise edition, is really to have this more elaborate relationship with Netflix where, hey, how about you buy 200 seats
right,
or 40 seats for all your recruiters, and you then just add them to a team account, and we move this to the Netflix domain, and it becomes amy@netflix.com, and you get a single invoice and all of that.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Right. So that's kind of, many times we kind of arrive Dropbox style from the bottom up for where somebody just needed to share a big file and they signed up and used Dropbox. And then in the end, we have this kind of corporate contract.
And I think that's a model that's been successful. Like almost the, you know, and some people have used a freemium model or a low cost model that's business to consumer, but there's still an enterprise target. So like even Apple, I think, was doing that with the iPad. Bring your own device has really evolved out of that. Box, you know, Dropbox and Box, you've highlighted that where it was like, I could, you know, I just need storage and I'm not getting it. And I need to share stuff and I'm not getting that from what I have. So it's really, I think that's probably been very successful. And then are you seeing also like small businesses adopt it? Like, you know, I see businesses like whether it's hair salons or spas or lawyers and accountants even where they're trying to book their time. Is there an application there and are they starting to adopt it or?
So we can certainly see SMBs and single professionals pick it up. And I think you touched on one for where we've certainly seen a unique pickup on kind of lawyers for where a large part of their job is actually meeting up with clients.
Right.
That is their service. Spending an hour with me is one billable hour where I can send Dennis an invoice. So they certainly picked it up because it's one of those things where trying to negotiate a time, that is actually not billable. So that is actually a loss. As in, that's five
right.
minutes I could have spent billing somebody. So if I can just ask Amy to set it up, then when Dennis arrives, then I can bill him and spend good time with him and I can be a happy customer. So we've certainly seen that. The thing with hair salons and other things is that there's sometimes a different type of scheduling for where it might not be a single person. It might just be that
multiple
one of the individuals
right.
in a group of people. And that is a segment we're not really working yet. It's very much help Dennis, help Michael, help
that
Tom.
That makes sense.
Help
okay.
Devin.
Well, I'm really fascinated about the solution. I could talk to you about that all day. So I'm curious about, so you began this in 2013. When did you guys go commercial and what were some of the challenges that you had to that point?
So we really commercialized this the very last days of 2016 and spent 2017 trying to refine both product tiers, product titles, pricing for the individual editions, what features go into what edition, and speaking to customers on, is this the right price? Because you can do all the surveys you want.
Right.
But there's nothing that really compares to having a product in market for you to pull out your credit card and me charging it. That is the ultimate survey. And that is something we spent all of 2017 on. And come the end of 2017, we did a price change
okay.
to align to where our customers told us to be. And that saw us end up on a $17 per month price for having a assistant in place to schedule unlimited meetings. And those learnings were just goals. And I could have kept asking people, but I needed to be out there testing on another price point before I could end up on that magical 17.
Interesting. So, and your factor in determining that pricing, so it sounds like you brought customers on, they gave you feedback, and you arrived at a number. Was it based upon just the volume that you can get, or what would keep them from churning? Like, what were some of the factors that motivated you to go with that number?
So we started at a price point that was higher than $17 per month, not just out of that seems about right, but after having talked to about 5,000
beta
users, not 10, not 20, 5,000 beta users were surveyed and interviewed in great detail. So that was a study that just didn't come about based on nothing.
That's a big survey.
Feedback. But it was still a price where we could see. And here's a funny thing. We could see that as soon as we went above 20, there was a real step function. So 20, 21, 29, 34, 39 is pretty much the same price, interestingly enough.
But the perception.
But it's a perception thing. And there's a lot of pricing science that can be extracted, not just from what we've done, but from other studies as well. But we did it anyway. And what suddenly kind of hurt me as an entrepreneur was when I saw people churn saying, Dennis, I love it. The price doesn't seem right.
Wow, but really? Okay.
If you were to sell this at a different price, just because I only use it for a certain pool of meetings and it doesn't feel right. So let me know if you change your price. And that hurts. I'm actually okay in losing a customer if he tells me, Dennis, you don't do what I thought you did, or you do what I thought you were supposed to do, but not at a quality which I think is okay just yet. That's all things I can kind of work
yeah,
on.
Yeah, sure.
Keep tuning it, work harder, make it better, all of that good stuff. But it really hurts when they tell me, I love it, but you're a little bit off on price. I said, I really want to use it, but not at that price point. So spent, I would say, 3/4 of 2017 and really figuring that out. And then we changed it kind of come the end of the year. And we're in a really good spot now where we can see that the price just gelled with the market now at 17.
So, I mean, you referenced 5,000 beta testers. What was your approach to, first of all, putting the idea out there about the platform x.ai? And then what was the initial response? And like, how did you convert them? And was it done in chunks, or was it just kind of a flood? Like, I'm curious what that initial process was like and then where you're at now with that.
So we certainly had two advantages, not because we're more clever than the next guy, but given what we do here, that many times you have to explain to the market what pain you're trying to solve. As in, the pain is not immediately obvious. Say, my past venture for where human editors have been setting those homepages pretty much since they arrived with news on the internet. They didn't see any pain. It was for me to say that what you do now is so suboptimal that I will call that a pain. And given that I'm calling it a pain, I now have come up with a solution for a pain, but they didn't even see the pain to begin with. So that takes a lot of effort trying to explain to people that what you do now is something that you have to change. With what we were trying to attack, when I said, hey, do you like scheduling meetings? People immediately said,
like, no.
No.
I can tell you right away, no.
It didn't take any effort in kind of convincing people this was a pain. Number two, the solution, given that we latched on to the idea that you told us what you wanted, that you really want a human assistant, you just can't afford it. If I then tell you that I'm willing to pay for a human assistant, but the way I'm going to do it is that I'm going to re-engineer the human as a machine, and you can tell me then that I haven't done a good job, or you could be surprised that I did a splendid job, but the solution just immediately made sense. I said, yeah, I've seen a human assistant before. I've talked to human assistants before, kind of over email. I don't have one myself, but
right.
I've certainly been in meetings where I've been forced to talk to one. So pain and solution was super easy to recognize. However, the technical details, that was the hard part. And this is almost like a self-driving car where both pain and solution are easy to understand, but the engineering behind it is so difficult that it might not even be possible. So what you do, say you're a self-driving car company, is that you buy a used Toyota, you put a LiDAR on top, you go to the parking lot, you drive around in circles, you collect a little bit of data, and that becomes your kind of first training data set. It is so poor, you can barely do anything. But you wake up tomorrow, you drive around in circles a little bit more, one day you take it to kind of a semi-closed road, and then years in, you might take it to the highway. Another set number of years in, you might even take it to the city. And for us, it was the same thing. For where we had this closed beta, for where we had way more people who wanted to try it than we wanted to allow us to try it.
Okay.
Because it was more important for us that we collected good data than just random willy-nilly data. So we were very protective of those we let into the beta. So we had this very long kind of wait list, which is obviously fortunate and nice to kind of have.
So where did you find the wait list? Like, where did the people come from? Was it like from social media? Were you using advertising channels? I'm kind of curious because it's such a new concept. I'm just curious where you got the reception from. I know there's beta sites that sometimes people use, or...
We were certainly very willing to go sing our song and tell people about what we were working on. And remember, we started before the whole AI thing had become super sexy. So
right.
We were kind of so early that who should I pick? There's not really many to pick from. As in, if you want to talk about real AI or kind of like deep R&D, there's kind of us and a few others.
Right.
We even signed up for the .ai domain at a point where you can get a single letter domain.
I was going to say, you got a great domain. Like, that's x.ai, perfect.
In that regard, we were kind of able to drum up some excitement early on, but never really bought anybody into it. And then, of course, there's real virality to what we do, just by the pure fact that in this meeting, I'm most sure Laurel, who set it up for us, who's one of my human colleagues,
right.
Andrew, who set the whole thing up. And that means you've been exposed to our product, or you've actually tested our product without really signing up for it.
I see what you're saying. So it's viral in the sense that if I'm seeing... See, you know what's funny is because I don't know if I initially perceived who was the human and who was the AI. Which is
that interesting, right?
Right? That was really interesting. So, you know, I don't know if I got the benefit of understanding that, hey, I want this. Because it was almost too human, if that makes sense. So when you say virality, are you saying that people recognize that what they're dealing with is an AI and then they want to try it?
That is what's happening all the time.
Oh, interesting.
So almost all
I think I missed that. It was too
perfect. Which is fine. So we've been very tempered in using that. As in, we don't want this to be something for where Amy and Andrew become sales machines. As in, I'm okay you having experienced my product, and the experience was so natural that you didn't even catch on that, hey, I should actually go check this out. That's actually okay with me. I can figure that out later. It's much worse if the experience was bad and you don't want to use it. So I'm fine with that, and we can figure out to use that. But most of the exposure is just Amy and Andrew being good employees.
Interesting.
And then being good employees.
That's crazy. Okay.
People say, hey, I went to college with Dennis. How the hell can he afford an assistant? What's going on here? And then they figured out.
It's those two exits.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. And then, so what is your sales model going forward? Like, are you doing everything digitally? Is there an effort to go out with a hybrid model where you're using salespeople to go direct? Like, I think people are always interested in understanding, okay, I've got interest and attention. How does this convert? Like, do I need a human? Can I do it digitally? I'm curious what your experience has been.
So my experience is certainly one for where if you want to attack the enterprise, there is no escaping. you building up a traditional sales force. You can have all sorts of fantasies of you're going to be the first company for where we don't need that. Good for you.
Right.
I'm not a believer in you being able to pull it off. And you'll always end with it if you want to attack the enterprise. And we can talk about companies for where they'll tell you stories about, we don't have a sales force. Sure you do. And you might call them something else, but they are a sales force.
Have any of your startups been in San Francisco and Silicon Valley? I'm just curious. Or have they been all, you're in New York now, I know.
Yeah, so we haven't done any of our ventures in the Valley.
Okay.
And that might just be...
There's nothing wrong with that. The reason I bring it up is because I noticed what you're saying was hitting with me where, you know, I would do presentations or, you know, book signings in San Francisco, and there's this weird thing where you meet these young founders, they've got some money that's come in, and they're like, we're generating tons of leads, we're getting really good response, we have two customers. And I'm like, well, talk to me about that. And they're almost stubborn to nth degree that they don't want to have salespeople or don't need them. They're trying to figure out, well, how do I just digitally sell? And I'm like, you have a $100,000 product. You don't. And you're dealing with a business that needs a PO and has multiple stakeholders and this complexity. And they have a part-time salesperson, literally.
And
so it's funny that you say that. Like, I think you hit it on the head that it's the wisdom of reality.
Sadly, it comes with age, where we all perhaps grow up on the idea that we're going to be the one company for where there's going to be a page and a credit card form, and I never need any commercial aspects inside these four walls.
Interesting.
It's just not how the buying process works in any enterprise today, and I simply don't see any version of the future where that disappears. And then again, I actually don't mind. For me, it's not one of those things where, oh, that is the one thing in our organization that I dislike. No, I actually like the selling process. I don't mind working the top of the funnel, the five steps, the close. Help, I'll even do the wine and dine thing and all of that good stuff that comes with selling six-figure contracts. Because if you want to be an enterprise sales, that is what you sign up for. So you can't enter that space and say you don't want to do that. You have to say, then I want to be a consumer company. Fair enough, if you want to sell, and you can have great success in selling $2 a pop apps in the app store and outdo me 10 times over. Good on you.
But even that goes to zero. So
for a SaaS product, you got to sign up for that top down. What I'm doing perhaps not differently, but what I think is now possible is to generate leads from the bottom up. What I described before, that there's single individuals who are signing up for our product within the organization. But I'm not fooling myself into believing that I have Netflix as a customer yet. What I know is that, hey, there's people at Netflix using my product and paying for it, but they become just a starting point for me to figure out how do I work it from the top down. I can ask them for a referral. They can become internal advocates. They can become proof points when we start to work the CIO and all of those things that can be kind of a different kind of attack angle. But it's still through a traditional sales force.
That makes sense to me. And I think I'm seeing that more and more. It's just, you know, we can trick ourselves, but it's not reality. So I want to be conscious of your time. And we're probably running a little over what I had promised. But I'm really interested in what you're doing. And you provide some really great insights for me. I'm going to wrap up on three things. One is, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you, Dennis, and for X.AI?
First thing they should do, if they were so kind as to go back into their calendar and look at those 24 meetings, is to go to x.ai, which is the website, and sign up for a trial. I said, you should try this out. If for nothing else, you'll be reading about AI for the next coming years on end. If you want real experience with something which is being delivered with full autonomy, you should check it out. I hope you'll like it. I hope you'll fall in love with it. Hell, I might even hope that I can extract $17 from you, but that's not the point. If you want to be exposed to this,
it seems like a pretty reasonable bargain. But
sign up for a trial. If you want to find me personally, where I tend to kind of comment on two things, either AI or just entrepreneurship, I'm at Dennis Mortensen on all the usual platforms.
Okay, great. So I ask all of my guests this question. It's the second last question, and then I'm going to put you on the spot. So how are you, or I guess X.AI if you prefer, but how are you, Dennis, changing the world?
I would like to believe that there's things that you and me weren't supposed to do, as in you and me were supposed to do many things, as in all the good things that comes with human ingenuity. But I think we got sucked into a pool of snot, and I'm hoping that I'm one of those guys who's removing just a tiny sliver of snot that you hate to be associated with. And for me, that is just scheduling meetings. There's other things in your inbox that you'd rather be without. Other people work on that. But I actually think, forget about whether we end up being commercially successful or whether this becomes a must-have and it can't be commercially viable. If I can remove that, I think I've added a little bit of value, because I don't know a single individual who will tell you that I love scheduling meetings. They just don't exist. So I'll be hunting that forever until we completely removed it.
Terrific. That's amazing. Okay, and the final question, and then like I said, I always ask interesting guests that come on the show. We would like you to nominate someone. And it's usually the first person that pops to your mind that you think would also be an interesting guest to be on Automate and Grow. We typically talk to experts or entrepreneurs, so it can be someone that's in the Silicon Alley space or someone that you think that would talk about one of the sort of subjects that we talk about. So I'd like you to nominate someone, and that would be someone that you could introduce us to.
I should nominate somebody. Ooh, I should have prepped for that. That's a curveball.
That's why I throw everybody on the spot at the end. So, but again, the first person that pops to your mind is usually the best. So,
who should I pick? I think perhaps Matt from Firstmark.
Okay.
Matt, he's one of our investors. He sits on my board. But that aside, I think he's got some real good fundamental insight on how to run startups.
Great.
Which I enjoy. Once every quarter, he comes out with one of those blog posts that are just a must read. Yeah.
Matt.
Nominate him.
Terrific. And what's Matt's last name?
Turk.
Turk. Okay, so Matt Turk, you've been nominated to appear on an episode of Automate and Grow, and we'll follow up with Dennis on that. Dennis, I want to thank you very much for appearing. This has been very insightful from a bunch of different angles. So I really appreciate your time, and I'm glad that you were able to join us.
This was fun. Thanks so much again for having me.
Thank you very much. And this has been episode, did we say 17? Oh my God.
17.
Episode 17 of Automate and Grow. And we will see everybody on episode 18.
This has been an episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. Check out other episodes for interesting topics on how to grow, innovate, and automate your business. Subscribe or like us on iTunes, YouTube, Google Play, or on our website at www.automategrow.biz, and get your copy of the book Automate and Grow at Amazon today.